Start a conversation about people who cross the border from Mexico without permission, and there's a good chance you're starting an argument. People do cross the border illegally, often because they feel there's no good alternative. Laws against their choice exist, as do people charged with enforcing those laws. But in the harsh Arizona desert, nature can provide a harsher penalty than the law. Peg Bowden, a former public health nurse, used to live in the Rogue Valley and now lives by the border in Arizona. She writes of her experience helping people in physical distress in the book A Stranger at My Door, Finding My Humanity on the U.S.-Mexico Border. Peg, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Oh, and thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
At the front of the book, you talk about the desert as a place most people would not set foot, but you love it. What does living in the desert do for you?
Well, it's a place of stark beauty. It's a place where you can be totally alone. You can be in silence. I look at the Milky Way almost every night. It's a place, I think, where you can contemplate who you are, what your next goals are. In fact, you know, I wrote a lot of my book in my head while by walking in the desert. So that's one of many reasons that I like it. Plus, I really like living near a border because it's so rich in ethnic ways, different languages, various foods you don't find elsewhere, great music, friendly people, and it's like having one foot in Mexico and one foot in the U.S.
So, you live in the Nogales area, is that right?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So did you think much about the cross-border traffic, though? I mean, you know, the people crossing without permission.
When we first moved here, which was 2002, yes, quite frankly, I was worried about it. We lived on a ranch, which is quite remote. I was afraid there might be drug traffickers. I mean, the media portrayed the desert as a real killing field where there was a lot of violence, there was a lot of drugs, there were a lot of bad people. And what I discovered was, well, first of all, we saw very few migrant activity coming through our property because we live in a very remote, rugged area. And secondly, I became involved with some of these folks that are desperate to find a better life. And I, quite frankly, I just loved them. They were generous, polite, curious, so much wanting to put a positive face on America, even though many of them know that so many people in this country, frankly, despise them. So I quit worrying about it.
And close to Christmas of 2013, the situation came right to you, pretty much right to your doorstep. What happened?
It did, yes. It was winter solstice, which is, you know, the longest night of the year. It was snowing. And I understand there's a little bit of snow in Ashland as we speak.
Oh, more than a little, yes.
Okay, great. The dogs were raising commotion outside. I went outside and I saw a figure across the canyon wrapped in a trash bag that he was using as a poncho. And he was holding an agave stick, like a walking stick. Our eyes met, even though he was more than 100 feet away. And he called out to me words that I'll never forget. He said, "Help me, help me. I'm lost. My heart is dying." And he spoke in English.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the beginning of a relationship with this desperately lost soul who eventually collapsed on our patio.
Peg Bowden is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a former public health nurse and a former Rogue Valley resident now living near the border in Arizona. She's written a memoir about helping people who cross that border without permission. It's called A Stranger at My Door, Finding My Humanity on the U.S.-Mexico Border. She'll be back in the Rogue Valley next Thursday, December 5th, to speak at the Rogue Valley Unitarian Fellowship. You can join our conversation now at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You tell us his name was Juan Carlos. You are a nurse. You could easily assess what kind of shape he was in. What was that?
Yeah, he was in pretty bad shape. He was beads of perspiration were on his forehead. He was feverish. He was hallucinatory, and he wasn't tracking well. That is, his thoughts weren't following each other. It was difficult for me to assess what was going on with him because I had a little trouble following his story. He spoke a little English, spoke mostly Spanish, so we struggled with that because my Spanish is probably mediocre. I took his blood pressure, I assessed him, thought about taking him to the hospital. He said, no, I need to rest. Can I just rest here? So we brought him in the house, and he stayed with us for a few days.
Well, neither you nor your husband, Lester, thought of calling Border Patrol, you're right. But if they had come to your door, what might have been the penalty for you?
Interestingly, it's against the law to provide food, water, shelter to an undocumented person. But first of all, I never asked this man if he was undocumented. Mm-hmm. He was a lost person in the desert. And I think basic humanity demands that we help each other out, particularly when you're more dead than alive. And this man was in crisis. So my decision was, if he were to get worse, of course I would take him to the hospital. But I'm a nurse. I monitored him. And he got better very quickly. First of all, he was pretty young. He was 28.
Oh, wow.
And so he responded to water. I did all the wrong things at first.
Oh,
I gave him
you fed
food.
Him.
Mm-hmm. He quickly upchecked everything I gave him, and then I realized this man is in more trouble than I thought. So, I made chicken soup, and I nursed him back to health.
There's an instructive flashback in here, Peg, to your youth. Your father apparently was not so open-minded as you appear to be now.
Right. I grew up in Chicago in the 40s, the 1940s. It was probably one of the most segregated and racist cities in the country. I remember vividly colored-only bathrooms, white bathrooms, colored-only water fountains, white water fountains. There were absolutely no people of color in my neighborhood in South Chicago. My father, and I thought this was normal, and I'm afraid my parents were very racist at the time and did not want me to talk or become friends with any person of color. And indeed, that was kind of hard because there were none at my school. But my life changed for the better when I moved to Tucson. We moved to Tucson when I was 12, and I went to a very diverse high school. And my parents softened about the whole situation as well.
And you lived in the Rogue Valley for what, about 30 years or so?
I did, yeah. Mm-hmm. I worked at the Jackson County Health Department, and I was a public health nurse. And I lived in Ashland, most of that time.
So back to the person you met in your property in Arizona. Juan Carlos was not making his first journey. What was his story?
He was escaping his village in Guatemala, and he had been to the U.S. This was his third crossing. In his first crossing, he was successful, and he returned home when his mother got sick. Second crossing, he was caught, and he was in a detention center or prison in McAllen, Texas, for a while. And this was his third crossing. So he became separated from the group he was crossing with and was lost for 4 days in the desert before he came to our door.
And so you nursed him back to health and then came up with a plan. Tell us about what you guys thought you would do.
Well, his family provided a ride or a driver. And so I took Juan Carlos to a place to meet this driver because our ranch is very difficult to find, and I was just having trouble explaining how to get to our ranch. So again, I was taking a big risk because transporting someone without documentation is against the law in Arizona. However, as I said before, I never asked Juan Carlos if he was a citizen, if he had papers. I mean, he could have had a green card. He could have been a legal resident. I never asked those questions because I frankly didn't want to know.
Mm-hmm. It made it easier as a don't ask, don't tell kind of situation.
Exactly, yeah.
Peg Bowden is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a former Ashland resident and a public health nurse now living by the border near Nogales, Arizona and Mexico. She's written a book about finding someone on her property a couple days before Christmas in 2013 and helping that person. The book is called A Stranger at My Door, Finding My Humanity on the U.S.-Mexico Border. Peg will be in Ashland next Thursday evening, December 5th, at the Rogue Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. You can join our conversation now on the program to talk about book and life. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You point out early in the book, this is not something you did with Green Valley Samaritans, but you did do some work with the Green Valley Samaritans, didn't you?
Yes, and I still do. Mm-hmm. I volunteer regularly with the Green Valley Samaritans, which means I go on desert searches. I do water drops in the desert, and that means I carry water with a group of Samaritans to known migrant trails, because the goal of the Samaritans is to prevent deaths in the desert. This is a big issue in my backyard. In our whole area, there are 12 to 15 bodies found every month within a mile or two of where I live. And so this is horrifying to me, and I feel compelled to do something about it. And so that's why I'm a member of the Samaritans. I also go down to Mexico every week, twice a week actually, and serve at a place called El Comedor, which is another word for dining area. And so I help serve breakfast, I take supplies, I treat people's wounds, and mainly I just talk with the migrant population about why they left their homes 1,000, 2,000 miles away, why they're willing to risk their lives to come to this country when they know they aren't welcome here.
Is the answer pretty consistently similar?
Yes. Well, first of all, the whole dynamic has changed, I'd say, in the last year. Most of the people I meet now in Nogales, Mexico, are applying for asylum. They are wanting to cross legally. There is quite a logjam of people waiting for their chance at asylum. In fact, there are 4,000 at least in Nogales, in very primitive shelters, waiting months, while the Department of Homeland Security takes their sweet time, which is my opinion, assessing them. You know, they only assess maybe 2-3 families a day, if that. So it's a crisis at our border right now. And so that not as many people are crossing illegally because they have every right to apply for asylum.
Because they're coming from places where the conditions are dangerous.
Are dangerous. I've met so many people whose husbands, brothers, sisters have been killed. Lots of children, lots of women are waiting for asylum, and they're fleeing for their life. And the sad part of this is that they're being forced to wait in Mexico with the new Remain in Mexico policy mm-hmm. that just went into effect in the last week or two. And the border communities can be dangerous, particularly for vulnerable people like the asylum seekers. So they're really stuck in a hard place.
Now, Peg, there's always controversy over the people who cross the border, always efforts to stop them, and obviously the controversy has been turned up even more in the last 4 years. I mean, is it obvious to you, helping people in that situation, what a policy direction going forward could or should be?
Yes, you know, I'm not a politician, I'm not a policymaker, but I think a few simple things we could do is increase the number of work visas so people could cross legally, work for 4 or 5 months. In fact, many of them come to Oregon. They pick peaches, they pick pears, and they've been doing this for years. But they want to be able to cross back home, back into Mexico and Central America safely. And they can't right now. They can't go back and forth. So increasing work visas would help.
So in actually, in actuality, what you're saying is that, there's more pressure. I mean, it's easier for them to stay than to try to come back in later.
Exactly. It's like we've trapped them in our country, and then we're raising all sorts of cane about that. You know, 11 million are here illegally, whereas I think many of them would return home. Of course, their homes, many of their homes now in Central America are chaotic. There's corruption, there's violence, and family members have died there. But, you know, I would like to see our government perhaps pour more money into infrastructure in Central America and in the southern parts of Mexico, where so the people could live there safely if the water was clean, if the schools would open again.
If life were better there, they wouldn't seek a better life here.
Exactly. I think they would go back in a minute. Most of them very much miss their home. It's very poignant. The children, you know, when I ask them to draw their home, they draw their pets. Huh. They draw their dogs, or their cats, or their ponies. Those are the things they really miss.
There's a question in the book you ask rhetorically of Juan Carlos. Why is helping this man so incredibly difficult? I mean, I doubt there's a fully satisfactory answer, but did you come up with one over time?
No. I'm still struggling with that because the laws of our country make it very difficult to help someone. I mean, the one positive thing that's happened just in the last week is Scott Warren, who is the No More Deaths volunteer, was found not guilty of providing food, water, and shelter to mm-hmm. two lost migrants. And the whole premise was you can't criminalize human kindness. And I feel like to be totally human, we've got to be kind to each other and help each other out, give each other a helping hand when we're in a tough spot. And so that's exactly what I attempted to do with Juan Carlos.
And the book is called A Stranger at My Door, Finding My Humanity on the U.S.-Mexico Border. It's the work of Peg Bowden, who is a public health nurse, a former public health nurse, and a former resident of the Rogue Valley. Back in the Rogue Valley in Ashland next Thursday evening, December 5th, at the Rogue Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. It looks like at 7 p.m. Peg, welcome back to the Valley, and thanks so much for sharing your story with us in advance.
Thank you, and it was a pleasure talking with you.
All right, take care. That'll do it for the first hour of the Jefferson Exchange today. More coming up in hour number two as we're with it with the person who got into Scientology and then got out again. That's in hour two of the Jefferson Exchange coming up.